okay, you've done all the yard work, you know, all those, all the mulch is put on everything. You know, the gravel's been put back in the driveway. Maybe you've actually, you know, gotten rid of the mice that came in to inhabit your house, and you know, all these different things you've talked about over those winter months about what's going on with your house. And you're living in your house and it's okay, but it's not okay. You're thinking, you know, there's some part of my house which I don't like. It doesn't function well. This room's too big. This room's too small. There are issues in the house which you can't put your finger on. You know it's a down economy. You say, I can't sell this house. I don't have enough money to move out of this house. Maybe I don't even have money to add on to this house. What do you do? What do you do when you know, a coat of paint's not going to do the trick? What do you do when you realize that, you know, nothing's leaking, nothing's wrong, but the house doesn't function? Well, a lot of it depends, to me anyway, speaking as an architect, on what your tenancy is. How long will you be in this house? If you're going to be in this house for less than 5 years, then virtually I would live with it. Get over it. Don't worry about it. Do the paint job. If you're going to be in this house longer than 5 years, this is not a bad time to think about construction. Construction costs, if anything, are going down a little bit. They've definitely leveled off, but I would say in the last year or two, with the level of construction dropping, subcontractors have begun to realize that they can't make as much money in every job. General contractors are realizing that they've got to keep their men and women employed. Well, what do? Well, they have to make themselves cost competitive. So what do you do, though? You've never renovated before. You don't know what the hell's going on. You know, this room feels tight, but I don't know. Maybe the house is big enough. I don't know. Well, there are three levels you can take. The first level is you can try to figure it out yourself at no cost. Do some common sense things of combining rooms or adding windows or maybe putting on a screen porch, and that might be okay. You can work directly with the town. You'd save the fees of somebody who is a design professional, but you're probably not going to have the control over your builder, nor will you have the assuredness that whatever builder you work is going to be giving you value for your money without an outside professional. Well, what outside levels of professionals can you have? Well, there really are three. For interior work, they're interior designers. I'm a licensed interior designer, by the way. Did you know that in the state of Connecticut?
You learn something new every day.
I am a licensed interior designer in the state of Connecticut, as well as being a licensed architect. And there are many interior designers that can handle a lot of things just as well as any licensed architect can handle it, involving space, decoration, even windowscaping, things like that that involve really an interior ambiance without even thinking about the outside of your house. And maybe that's all you need. Well, that's one level. The other level is going with a designer, quote-unquote. Maybe somebody's had architectural training but can't call him or herself an architect. And there are a lot of those around. They're actually, if you look in there, you can see them, residential designers, house designers. They're in the phone book. There's actually an association of residential designers in the United States that are unlicensed architects. And they are truly, many of them are truly skilled professionals. And then there are architects like me that actually charge a little bit more, are licensed, can do work that involves any construction over 5,000 square feet or anything that has to go in front of architectural review boards that require architectural drawings, which really is in the far western part of Connecticut. But the truth is, as with all of this, with determining a builder or determining an architect, you really have to have on-point experience. What you can't do is hire an architect of a skyscraper to design an interior renovation. You also can't hire a kid out of architecture school that's never designed anything to spend $400,000 to renovate your house. You have to find demonstrable proof that the person that you're thinking about, builder or architect, has done your job before. That is the only way you're going to get the maximum value out of that person. And how do you go about doing that? Well, you can go in the phone book, I guess. But the truth is, you could probably go to the AIA in Connecticut, a great organization, Connecticut AIA. They've got a list of people that they can refer you to, small job architects, a whole sublist. I'm actually on that list. Did you know that? How about that? That you can go to for referrals. And that's also okay, I guess. But, you know, the way that I've told clients to do this, or potential clients to do this, is to talk to people that have already done the work you want to do. Again, on-point experience. Not, you don't want to go to a person that's built a 7,000-square-foot house or a 1,000-square-foot house if you're going to be doing a 200-square-foot renovation. Because that's a whole different bag of fish. Is that a mixed metaphor? Bag of worms, can of fish, whatever it is. You really want to make sure that what you're doing when you hire a professional is hiring somebody that's done your job before. And how do you do that? You ask your friends. It's the word of mouth. That's all it is. And your friends have friends who have friends. Somebody has done your job before. And you really want to interview at least three designers / architects / whatevers so that you can actually see what have they done. What do they do? Ask them their design process. Ask them their construction observation, supervision process. Then from them, ask if they've worked with other builders and get at least three builders to interview and talk to. They're going to actually talk to you now. They don't have a lot of work. You know, there's actually going to be more availability. That's the joy of a downside residential construction economy. There's availability. There's a desire to please. There's less of a sense of, well, whatever, I just work on an hourly basis, pay the bill and get out. They will actually give you numbers now because they need to, because they want to keep employed. So you can take control of even the smallest part of your house that's dysfunctional. What you can't do is think that you can hit a project that is very, very small with high expertise and not pay probably more than you should, or the reverse. You can't have a large-scale dysfunctional house, meaning that there's major flow problems on the inside of it, major view problems. You can't hit that with the same efficiency and value and thoughtfulness on your own as you would with advice of counsel of somebody that's done this job before many times, either as a builder or as a designer. You can't do a large project well without somebody to advise you. And the way you want to get this job done effectively, on a budget, on a schedule, is to have an objective third party, not you, not the builder, to look over both of your shoulders and basically say to you, that's a good idea, that's a bad idea, have you thought about this, have you thought about that? It'll cost you between 5 and 15% of your budget, depending on which way you want to go. You know, unlicensed interior designers, licensed interior designers, unlicensed architects, or really residential designers, they can't call themselves architects, or professional licensed architects, low to high scale. But the truth is, gear what you do to what they do, so that you'll match your needs with their skills and you'll maximize the value of the money you have to spend.
Duo Dickinson is an architect, author, and the contributing writer in home design for Money Magazine.